So here we have a brief recap of what we did. The main things we introduced yesterday. So after having done all these, introduce all the formalism that I'm not gonna write again with the two types of Cartan calculi on M and F, we started working again with Lagrangians and hopefully doing some physics. So we started with the Lagrangian density. I call it density because it's a top form. So. And so it's a top form on spacetime, of course. So it can be integrated on spacetime to give us a number, which is, or better, a functional on field space, that which is an action. So here I could write S, M, L is a function or a zero form on field space. Then taking variations of this Lagrangian density, we can use either Taken's theorem or more simply integrating by parts enough. We get equations of motion which are proportional to delta phi without any derivative acting on it on delta phi, plus a total derivative. So a boundary term if you want, which is this covariance symplectic potential current. This is a long name. Nobody calls it with so many words, but the reason why I'm being so pedantic is because I want to emphasize two things which are more unusual. Well, it's called the potential because what the more interesting object is omega, which is its derivative in field space, so that's why it's called the potential. But the two things I want to emphasize is that it's not just a symplectic potential. I call it covariant because it's not really symplectic. So it's a way to say, well, it's actually something is slightly different. And we will see how it relates to a true symplectic potential later on. But this is not symplectic because this is not symplectic. So same thing here. In fact, only two forms can be symplectic or not. Since this is not symplectic in the sense that it's non-degenerate, in general, at least, and these cannot have the name symplectic either. Then these two are currents because they're not quite two forms on field space or one forms on field space. They're also top minus one forms on spacetime. So this current word explains, well, is a way to say that they are top minus one form on spacetime. So like neutral currents will be top minus one forms on spacetime. And those are currents like the electric current and objects like this. So they can be integrated over surfaces. So are there questions so far? Any clarification needed? OK. So at the end, I stated this important result. Oh, and the last thing I want to mention is this symbol. Remember what it meant? It was going on shell. Which means pulling after pullback stands upon pullback to, well, or let's say by the embedding of the solutions of the equations of motion into field space. So if we pull back our differential forms on the space of solutions of the equations of motion, we are going on shell. So remember, we're going on shell both with respect to the configuration we evaluate things at, but also we intend all variations to be on shell. So the variations will be solutions of the linearized equations of motion. So with this understanding of that symbol, we get this important result. So let's prove it. So this is an immediate consequence of our definitions and the way we're doing our calculus. So we have, since we worked so hard to set up this calculus, now we do see the benefits of it. So zero is, of course, delta square goes to zero because it's an exterior differential. But so what is this? This is d of, well, that thing over there. And now it's an immediate observation, well, observation that this goes across. When we pull back, this term vanishes because not only E goes to zero, but also all variations go to zero. When we see an E, just everything drops because of this rule over here. And therefore, we immediately get this expression. So this is on shell. This becomes zero plus d of d theta, which is d of omega, because this, remember, goes across. Yes?
The symmetric potential on a should be top minus 1, comma 1.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yes, absolutely. So super simple. And it's so simple because we have worked hard before. So it's kind of everything becomes manifest in this language. So going back to our pictures, what does this mean for us? Well, we can look at two cases. We can look at the case without boundaries, remember? So m, sigma final, and sigma initial. So in this case, I can define omega. Well, we can even do the general case. It doesn't matter much. So we have these, and then we have b. I was calling b the time-like boundary. So if we integrate, so corollary, an obvious corollary of this, which is the conservation of the current, give us conservation of the charges, if we understand it appropriately. So if we integrate 0 over the manifold m, of course, we get 0. So we have 0 on the left-hand side. And now we can write this as a boundary integral. And remember, the boundary integral here is given by 2 sigmas and 1 b, and the sigmas have opposite orientation. So this becomes omega on sigma final minus omega on sigma initial plus whatever goes through the boundary B, the time-like boundary B. So it's a bit nicer to write this as omega final. Now it's not a form anymore. It's just is the integrated one, minus omega initial is equal to, so here I don't want to call it omega b, let me call it symplectic flux. I just write it in words. So we see that omega is conserved if there is no, if sigma has no boundaries, this term vanishes because b is not there. So sigma omega becomes, disintegrated omega becomes conserved. So if sigma has no boundary, then omega final becomes on shell equal to omega initial, which means that there is only one omega sigma in reality. So this is the abstract sigma, right? It doesn't matter anymore which sigma I'm taking, how is sitting inside my my foliation. So it's pointless at that point to distinguish between the final sigma, the initial sigma. This is just any Cauchy surface. So it means that I can, there is an abstract space, which is, I take F, the space of solutions, and I can keep this space with the on-shell simplex, well, the omega integrated over any Cauchy surface evaluated on shell, so on this space. So I'm not going to use this expression much, so that's why I'm not pulling out a new symbol for it. But we, I want to, I will give an example in a second of this type of object. The point I want to make is that this does not really depend on the practical choice of sigma, is any Cauchy surface. So this, as much as, and this is a, now, this is truly a two form on F. Well, so yeah, the letters are not the best, but so now if everything goes well, we might have a symplectic structure, right? It's not obvious that this is the case, and in general will not be, but if everything goes well, this might be and this is what is called the covariant phase space. So if everything goes well, this should be related to the usual canonical phase space. Now we have a candidate. Before we didn't have a candidate because this is a top minus one two form, but there is always this space-time piece. And what do you do with it? Well, this theorem tells you how to deal with that problem. And the fact that you can integrate it over sigma on shell is conserved. So now you have an abstract structure on a space-time, on an hyperbolic, on a globally hyperbolic space-time like this, where you get the space of solution together with this object, is a good candidate for a symplectic space. I leave it there. We will come back to this important point later on in the course. Before, I want to do things that do not really need going into studying the details of whether this is symplectic or not. I want to do other things, but I will come back to it. Now, what is this symplectic flux? This symplectic flux just means that suppose that this object is symplectic. Essentially, the conservation is telling you that if you look at the degrees of freedom here, or in the past or in the future, you have the same degrees of freedom, roughly. They might be scrambled, but they are the same degrees of freedom. This term is like a leakage of degrees of freedom outside of your system across your time-like boundary. So when you evaluate it on certain variations, it means that you are comparing neighboring solutions and so on. So roughly, this is a heuristic picture. This symplectic flux term is telling you how much things are going out, are leaking out. So if you want to impose, it might be a way to think about, oh, what kind of boundary conditions are nice that make, I don't know, reflective boundary conditions that mean that there's no leakage of degrees of freedom outside or towards the inside, maybe, not just if you could have something entering or something going out. But if you put strong enough boundary condition, you might be able to set this term to zero. And so it's a good starting point to think about what kind of boundary conditions could be natural. Then one has to study the equations of motion to make sure, and so on. But this gives you a very good candidate if you're playing that kind of game. Okay, so I will I will not try to write all of this down. Let's see an example. So the example I want to consider is let's do an n-particle system. N particles as a one-dimensional field theory. So what is this dimension is time. So remember, in this case, we have m, which is r. And so sigma is 1 point. So I will not keep track of it. And so where do the particle live if they don't live on sigma? Well, in this picture, the it's like in string theory. You have a target space. And here, the target space is not that of a string. It's that of a particle. So the word sheet is a word line. And the target space is r to the 3n. Right? We have n particles, so we need to specify the position of all n of them. And now the Lagrangian will be L dt, where L is of q, is, well, of course, we can take something of this sort. And now it doesn't take, you take the variation of L, and you find the equations of motion, which I'm not going to write again. And then you find dt times theta, right? So you get this theta, and theta will be what you get when you integrate by parts this species. So it will be a sum of over alpha. Now, m alpha q dot alpha I. Well, here, of course, there is a metric. It's a delta j, delta q alpha j. And that's it's a zero form on M because it's a top minus one, but M is one dimensional, and then we have field space F, and so this is not a dq in the sense this is truly a delta because I'm thinking of these as functions. So this q is not a function in Rn, is a function from r to the 3n. So I'm thinking of it as a function now, not as a coordinate in Rn. It's a function between time and Rn. So this d here is not quite the old D, is a variation on the space of histories, like this. And then, of course, omega will be just the same. And as you can see, let me actually write it a bit more carefully now, dt q alpha j. So what I want to emphasize is that we also have these mixed forms here. And it's totally OK. So, well, it's not the mixed form because it's not in dt. But what I mean is there are derivatives acting on q. This makes sense because this q, again, is a history. OK? So histories. And of course, we would like to see what happens when we do that. So when we do that, we're going, so this omega sigma is the same as saying I evaluate my omega at a given time, right? This is like my initial time. So at a fixed time, this is delta qi alpha at dot at t0 j at t0. So now these are evaluated at a certain time. And in fact, they should be understood as the initial conditions of a certain history at that time. So these are initial conditions of a certain history at t equal to naught. Does this make sense? So now, from this perspective, these are two independent variables. So if I parameterize my fields, my on-shell field space by the space of initial conditions, I do go back to the usual phase space, which is dp dq. And now these, since I pulled them back to that space, are finite dimensional ones, because now there is no time anymore. So these become, in this simple example, coordinates on Rn, because time is a point. So functions between a point and target space are just the value that it takes. So in this case, we see immediately that we recover. So these on shell, they become this. So we see that from this observation, it follows that f e sigma, omega sigma is isomorphic to the canonical phase space. So, and therefore is symplectic, and it's a symplectic space. So this is just a machinery that tells you how to build the usual symplectic space from out of your Lagrangian automatically, like without thinking. Now, it doesn't always work this nicely in gauge theories. This will not be automatically symplectic, but in this example or another example that you can do as an exercise is the scalar field. If you follow the scalar field, you would have a very similar situation, except that now m is not a point anymore, but everything else more or less stays the same. And you find phi dot, delta phi dot, delta phi. Of course, now this stays functional spaces, because even if you remove time, you still get the dependence on space. But this will also be, if you want, delta pi, delta phi, instead of delta p, delta q. But is the usual, would be the usual scalar field. Here you get same result as for the particle. So this is the gist of this idea behind the covariant phase space method. But again, with gauge theories, there are subtleties. So the next step is to start introducing symmetries in these formulas. So far, we have not talked about them. Yeah?
So what is the difference between this formalism and what you call the canonical free space? Not very clear. You say that it's not necessarily simple.
Oh, the canonical phase space, so... I said what? Sorry?
You say that this formalism doesn't necessarily give you a symplexing.
Yeah. In this case, it does. So there is no difference between these and the usual canonical formulas.
But you say that because you found the two form in Darboux coordinates, or what do you say? Because you have to check whether it's non-degenerate.
Yeah, here, by inspection, I recognize that if I call these... I skipped a couple of steps, but if I think of them as initial conditions of a certain history, these are two independent Q dot and Q at time t0 are two completely independent data. Fixing them completely fixes my history, so I can map each history to an initial P and Q. So I could say, call these big Q, these big P, and this then becomes M dp dq. And I recognize that this is manifestly what I would have done through the Hamiltonian formalism, so by looking first at Lagrangian equations of motion, then doing the Legendre transform, and then et cetera, et cetera. This would give the exact same result.
The reason we find the canonical phase space here is exactly because of non-degeneracy.
Yes. So the problem that can arise is that this will be closed because we constructed this to be closed. The only problem that we can encounter is that it might happen to be degenerate. In presence of gauge symmetries, it will be degenerate in general because we are not modding out anywhere by the gauge symmetry. So we are identifying histories. We should identify some histories between each other by the gauge principle. And since we're not doing it, we can expect that something is amiss. But so far, we don't really care. We call it covariant. So again, the covariant has the same meaning as before. It doesn't need to be the usual phase space. It might happen to be. And so we save ourselves by adding this covariant for now.
Why did you kill the fluxes?
Sorry?
Why did you kill the fluxes? They introduced degeneracy.
Which fluxes?
Symplectic flux. You said that sigma doesn't have a boundary, so we might have a covariant phase space. Why does that depend on it?
Well, you can't. So if you want a one-to-one correspondence between objects, let me put it this way. If there is a boundary B, a time-like boundary B, the state on sigma f, your field configuration on sigma f, is not fully and solely determined by your configuration on sigma in. Because you have to tell me what is happening here. So stuff can come out and come in and influence what's happening there. Or, the stuff that goes out doesn't really matter because I might be able to predict from here what will go out, but they cannot predict what comes in, for example.
How is that an obstruction to my manifold being symplectic? Is that?
Yeah, no. So in case there is a symplectic flux, this is not true. So I cannot associate it to an abstract sigma. It would depend on which sigma I'm choosing. So I cannot have which sigma am I putting here.
You see? I might have a symplectic manifold, but that might not be the same for each sigma.
Well, the space of solutions, it kind of breaks a bit everything, I would say, unless you put good enough boundary conditions to kill this flux, and then you have a hope that things become autonomous, like the system inside the manifold with boundaries is autonomous, so it can be evolved from within itself. But without that, there is no obvious relationship between the space of histories with the space of condition on sigma. This is just an object that is, it's a candidate for something, but is not completely clear for what I would say. So then you could say, well, it still describes a portion of the degrees of freedom on the bigger manifold without boundaries. And then I can use it to describe, well, this form. The usual phase space is you need to know everything. You need to know to have a well-defined phase space. It's not, you can then restrict it and look at a subset of degrees of freedom, but this doesn't need to be, the dynamics doesn't need to be intrinsic to that region if there are boundaries. So it kind of, you have to rethink a little bit of everything, and it would be a different, a more complicated story. I'm not saying it cannot be done. I'm just saying I'm not gonna try to be as general as I would need to include it. Okay. Good. So we've done this, and now we go. Other questions? Yes. The point is that you just you don't need it well, you're doing it secretly when, in a sense, when you are trying to map whatever you find computing these. I would say here, so the difficulties of doing the Legendre transform and so on here are hidden in the fact that we need to go on shell, and we need to have a decent understanding of what it means to go on shell to be able to map whichever variables we find here to the space of solutions. So in fact, this is a non-shell method, which might be even harder than the usual story, which you can do off shell already. So in a sense, this is harder. But conceptually, is very neat, because if there are no boundaries also, Robin asked about, oh, I can add to big theta always some dx actor the other time, but if there are no boundaries, that will not affect this omega. So it's a completely intrinsic construction that has no ambiguity, and it gives you this candidate phase space. And it doesn't rely on anything, even, you know. So that's why, this is neat. And as we will see, it also quite, the Noether theorem becomes quite nice to write in this form, in this formalism and so on. And it's covariant. In fact, it's also covariant from a space-time perspective. It doesn't really depend on the 3+1 split you choose, because that's what we're proving, what we proved up there. So you can decide to slice things as you want, and you're guaranteed that that would work. It's much less clear in the canonical framework, which requires a choice of slicing to be set up in the first place. So here we are not doing it. We've never picked a time coordinate. We are doing things geometrically. I would say this is the main gain in doing things like this.
I was about to say the same thing.
Okay.
The transformation is not covariant.
Yes.
If we don't have any flux, we can take any space length.
Exactly. Yes.
One of the questions or remark, maybe, because we saw something similar with Kevin in mathematical physics, and something that surprised me about building the phase space this way is that the omega comes from the Lagrangian. The symplectic form, in some sense, is induced. And I always thought of the symplectic form as kinematical data, in some sense, as not dynamical data. And yet here it comes, somehow it's built out of the Lagrangian. And it only sees the kinetic term, I think.
Well, yeah, because it needs to, it only sees pieces in the Lagrangian which have derivatives, because theta is obtained.
Yeah.
You get theta terms whenever you have to integrate by parts to isolate a delta phi. So it means that you get that term whenever there are derivatives acting on your phi in the Lagrangian.
Yeah, and specifically also time derivatives, right? Because when we integrate over sigma,
well,
also the space.
That theta is completely covariant, doesn't care about time.
Yeah.
But Once you do a split, you choose one sigma. The one that matters is the direction transverse to that surface.
Okay.
Derivatives in the transverse.
So can any remarks be made about that? The fact that this only, once you integrate that, only the kinetic term in the Lagrangian is fixing the symplectic structure in some sense.
Yes, but with the caveat that Vatsalia was pointing out, that this is a completely covariant construction. So you can do, at that level, you have not picked a specific foliation. This is at any Cauchy surface. So if I'm, let's make a drawing. So I don't have to say what is the kinetic term, because that would require telling you what time is, and I'm not doing it here. So in, how can I draw this? So let's say I'm putting a time-like boundary, but this is not really, it's just to make the drawing. Whether I choose this surface or this surface or whatever else, it doesn't matter. These things will be conserved. So I can decide to compute my omega wherever I like. Again, the difficulty, at some point, there must be a catch. You cannot get something easy out of something hard. So the catch is that to really map these things on a canonical phase space associated to this specific choice of surface, you need to be able to map solutions of the equations of motion to some initial conditions, and that can be hard. You need to understand the equations of motion well enough to be able to do that. We will see off-shell methods later on. So maybe that for gauge theories, we will see that off-shell methods are useful. Here it doesn't really.
And I think the kinetic term, sorry, because planars have a first-order derivative instead of second-order, like in the kinetic term, and they induced a different surface. It ended up being somewhat different, the symplectic form.
Oh, you can do the exercise. You can also look what happens if you put. So you can look at both this Lagrangian, or you can look at this Lagrangian and see what changes.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you'll tell me. Yeah, so spoiler, you can choose whichever you like. Omega will be the same. Maybe not theta, but omega will be. OK, well, let me write it at this point. So same, different thetas, same omega. Why am I choosing these two? Because they are one integrated by parts with respect to the other. So they differ by boundary terms. So they give the same equations of motion, and so in principle, the same space F bar. So you can ask what happens to omega, and it turns out that they give the same omega. OK, so another. So another one. So another one is about the following idea that it's been hammered in your brains a lot, for sure, since you started doing physics, which is there is a sort of triangle of relationships between symmetries, conserved charges, and conserved charges. And in a canonical symplectic picture, or either Poisson or symplectin, doesn't really matter, there are these two, like this arrow, what it really means is that there is also, there are symmetry generators. So what this arrow, this is more an explanation of that arrow, in fact. So how are conserved charges related to symmetries? Where they are their symmetry generators. So we want to understand these set of ideas in this context, in this formalism. So suppose, so we start with a definition. Of what is a Lagrangian symmetry. So we want a symmetry action on field space. So we have rho, which is a map from a Lie algebra to field space, to, sorry, vector fields on field space, such that so this is an action. So remember, an action is in particular a Lie algebra homomorphism. So I'm not going, so this is linear, this is respect the brackets, and so on. I mean, I'm not going to repeat it. It's the same thing we did. It's included in the term action here, all of that. So the important new condition is that we wanted to preserve our Lagrangian. It's our starting point for all this business. So that's where we want to start. And so we say that this should be zero. But in fact, we can be a bit more relaxed than that. We can say a symmetry is something that preserves the Lagrangian up to boundary terms. This is what you do in GR, for example. You do it all the time already. So I call whatever is on the other side R. But the important thing, the non-trivial information in this equation, is the d in front of the r, of course. So this is where the relevant information is. So what is this r, if I have to specify it, is a top minus 1 form in, so let's see. It's a top minus 1 form because this is a top. This is dr. So it's a top minus 1 form on spacetime. What kind of form is it on field space? So what is L?
Zero.
Does the Lie derivative change the degree of the form? No. So this is a zero form on field space. And now, remember, this was, well, let's, this would be, let me just stop here. I don't want to add information about the Xi. So for every Xi, this is the case. I was thinking about, well, in fact, good. So this is also probably linear in Xi, but it depends exactly what one means by linear. So I will not, the question is the Xi linear in Xi? So in a sense, it is. In another sense, it's not. Because it depends if this can depend on space and et cetera, et cetera. It depends if I think of it, how I think of Xi. So I will not going to say that, but you can expect this to be linear in Xi. I want just to mention it a bit vaguely, without trying to make it more rigorous. OK, so this is our definition. And now we want to leverage this, or we can also write it like this. A bit nicer. So we want to leverage this definition to see if we can prove something interesting from it. And this is notor 1. And once again, we are going to so let's say L rho G rho, a Lagrangian symmetry, of L, then for all psi in G, J psi define as this, what is, so let's see where it lives. We'll fill the blank in a second. Is, well, let's do it immediately, actually. So this is like R, right? It's the same thing as R. So it's easy. It's easy enough. So it's a top minus 1, 0 form. So it's a current, again. So this is the Noether current. Is conserved on shell. More precisely, what is the equation that gives us the on-shell conservation is the following. D of J xi is equal to, well, I hope this sign is consistent. So of course this is the Noether current. Should be so. This is the conservation of the Noether current. How do we prove it? So we don't have a. We want to get E out of somewhere, and psi out of the, and delta. So how do we get this expression? We get this expression by looking at the variation of the Lagrangian and contracting it with the symmetry. So basically, we can look at how the Lagrangian changes under a symmetry. So on one side, we have by hypothesis that this is arc psi. So this is by hypothesis. And on the other hand, I use Cartan's formula to express L differently. So I write it like this, L. And now for the L, I want to, the equations of motion to come out from somewhere. So I just plug this other formula in. What do I get? The first, so here there are no, all the delta phi has been pulled out. So this guy is a vector field on field space. The only place it can contract with is delta phi. And the result, I just call it delta xi of phi, because it's how phi changes under my symmetry, right? So it's just the name I'm giving to this object as common. Okay. And the second term, well, we say that the delta and the d commute, so also the contraction with vectors must commute with the d, so this goes inside, no problem. It's just e I rho xi theta. And now I'm just, and I'm done, right? Is that, so I just pull things all on one side, and I get precisely this equation. And on shell, of course, this equation goes to zero, gives me zero. So I'm just moving this to, well, moving this to the right and this to the left, and that's all I'm doing at this point. So here, it looks like I've done nothing. I'm just rewriting the same thing into different ways, but the input is how I define the equations of motion, of course, like this, how the, what it means to go on shell, which is killing this term. And then the fact that I have a Lagrangian symmetry, which gives me this D. So these are the two inputs in this form, in this theorem. But you see, with the tools we have, it's immediate to, it looks even too simple, in a sense. It's almost cheating.
The lead derivative is contraction and exterior derivative plus exterior derivative and contraction. Why is the second term not there?
Oh, the other one, it's not there. You're right. There is an extra term in principle, which is di rho psi L. But this is a zero form. So this has nothing to contract with.
I thought it was a dot form.
On space. Space-time. It's a zero form in field space. So there's nothing to contract with. And this, so this is zero. So a different way to write the same thing, exactly the same thing, but in let's say, what you would find in the more standard notation would be the computation of this, delta xi of L. You just write it in two ways. By definition, on one side, this is this, and on the other side, you just write this other thing. So, but I think it's better to use this notation because it will help later to streamline things. Because now we're working with one forms. So again, covector and vectors doesn't really matter much. But when we start looking at two forms, it's much more convenient to use forms in that language. So this is a remark. If we have a if j xi is a top minus 1 zero form, so I just want to point out a few ways to think about this. So I can think of j as a map from G into top minus 1 forms on M cross F. Could also be thought as a map from from field space to let's leave it just like this. So as I was mentioning before, in some sense we expect some linearity property in this. So this will be R linear, in fact. R linear, I mean that if I multiply psi by 12, 7, minus 15, this will be linear. But might not be if I multiply it by a function of x. There's no reason this should be. So this is important because this j is not the, I was using j for momentum maps in the first part. So this will be like a momentum map. But the linearity properties of this momentum map, now one has to be a bit more careful because there is also space involved. There might be spatial derivatives or space-time derivatives, so one has to be a bit careful. I can also, if I take star of j, this will be gab ja dxb. So I can always convert a top minus one form into a vector field, which is the usual trick between currents and the duality, and then dj is zero if and only if dja is conserved in this sense. So I just, this is another remark. And the reason why this is R-linear, if you look at this formula, is because rho must be R-linear. And this is also, so it's because each of these terms is defined in a way that is necessarily R-linear. So sorry to go back, but you can see it from the previous definitions. And here I conclude. So a corollary. Of course, every time you have a conserved current, you have the associated charges. So this is the same reasoning as before. We have that 0 m j psi is equal to sigma in j psi, well, out in and some flux on B. So once again, if sigma has no boundaries, it means that Q sigma of psi defined like this does not depend on the way I'm putting I'm embedding my surface in the my Cauchy surface in the manifold. So in this sense, Q is a conserved charge. It doesn't depend where I compute it. So if you can take the example of the particle and check that angular momentum, for example, or total momentum under rotations have precisely this. You can compute the neutral current for them, for these symmetries, because everything there is invariant under rotations, for example, or translations. And so you can go and see that this J will give you exactly the angular momentum, and the conservation like this will be just dt of J, so dt of the angular momentum, because space is zero dimensional, so this will just be time derivative of functions. So you would find the angular momentum conservation right away from this formula. So the exercise would be n particle system G equal rotations, Q sigma psi equal angular momentum as a vector dot psi as a vector, right? And you see that this is linear in psi. So this is going to pick the direction psi of the angular momentum. Because yeah, these are not, so they are, again, dual-valued objects. So you can think of them as vector-valued in the case of SO3. Good. So tomorrow, maybe, on Thursday, we can start looking at, what we want to do next is to look at that diagram. So we have a conserved charge. We want to see whether it generates the symmetry. So we did the easy piece, and then there will be a more subtle one. OK? Yeah, Chris?
It should be dj in the first line for integral over m.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How do we relate the action to the specific variation of the delta psi of
V? Oh, it's what defines it. So, okay, this means that, so what is rho of psi? it must be a vector field on F. So if you remember my notation, I was saying that some x at phi will be this. And so here I'm just calling this, instead of writing delta of rho of xi, I just call it delta xi. So it's precisely the the component of rho. So these delta xi's are the components of rho.
And also have that is a group homomorphism. So one group can act different ways on a phase space, right?
Well, yeah, depends what kind of objects like these you choose. But you still have to choose them in such a way that the commutator of the row is the row of the commutators.
For example, in EGR, we say that that's the lead derivative of the field.
Yeah.
Is that unique, or is it just something that you
put in? No, it's an input.
Sorry?
It's an input of the construction. It's what you mean by that symmetry. So the symmetry is not really the Lie algebra. It's the action. So what I'm calling the symmetry is the action itself, which is the bundle, Lie algebra. You need both information, and the algebra itself can act in ways that are not symmetries. In print, like there's no, it's the two things together. Okay, see you this afternoon.